When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start, I have a Discord. Which is kind of where I put everything on. We talk about everything, music, podcast, merch, just general chat, food. The link is in the description. Go check it out. Secondly, if you do listen to this podcast and you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. It means that the podcast can keep going and I can keep bringing bigger guests and newer guests. And it just allows the podcast to grow, which is always a good thing for me. That's the only thing I will ever ask you to do on this podcast, so please do that if you can. This week on the podcast, AC Slater, owner of Nightbase Records. I've known AC for a long time and never really been able to like have a full-on like heart-to-heart conversation with him. We're always on holy ships, or we're always at festivals, or just like doing the usual DJ stuff that we don't ever really get to hang out and spend real time with. So I wanted to get him on. He's also about to celebrate 10 years of Nightbase Records, which I love what he's done in the community for that scene of like UK house music in America. It's special. So without further ado, AC Slater. What's cooking, man?
Man, you know, just chilling, talking to Will Clark.
It's been a long time. I have not spoke to you for fucking ages. I don't even know when the last time was.
I remember.
When?
I was thinking about it on the way here to my studio. We were at some festival in, I believe it was Canada. I could be wrong. I might have seen you like briefly, but we hung out at some festival that was like, there was like a house stage.
Yeah.
And there was like a dubstep, like a, you know, like a dubstep and like bass stage. And we were playing the house stage and we hung out and we were like walking around together and we went to the main stage and I was like, you want to hear something different? And you're like, yeah. And then we went to go see Kill the Noise and we hung out on the stage and you were like, okay. Like, yeah, yeah. And you're like, cool, cool. And then you're like, I'm going to go like walk around. And yeah, but that was the last time I saw you. I think it was pre-COVID.
That's got to have been like 2019.
Yeah, I think so, something like that.
Easy. Yeah. Or even 20. Jesus, man, how's life?
It's really good, man. A lot has changed since then.
It has. You got a baby.
I've got two babies.
Two babies. When did the second one come?
February. So congrats, I've got, man. It was hard. We had like two kids under two for like a while. And
that's a lot.
Yeah. So I got like a 2.5-year-old and an 8-month-old.
Amazing.
At home. Yeah.
You loving it?
Yeah, it's great. it's really hard when they're like infant, like newborns and infants. But now that my second is a little bit, you know, older, it's like manageable, you know. So
how's it's great. How's dad life changed your aspect on your life as well as your career, but just generally? I know it changes a lot for people, so I'd be really interested in that.
Yeah, it's really different. We had our first during like lockdown, like towards the end of like lockdown, like you know, and then things started opening up after she was born, and then we were like, all right, how's this gonna work, you know? And I just kind of had to figure out the touring thing and with my wife, and we got into like a pretty good groove quickly with it. Cause it wasn't as easy as just like, oh yeah, I'm going to go do a bunch of shows in a row and like not be home. Cause I want to be home to help, and I want to be home to like, you know, see everything. Cause so much happens when they're really young, like really quickly. So, we kind of got into a groove, and then, it's all like, it's just like a never ending adjustment as they grow and change, and the responsibilities change with you, the parents as well. So it's kind of like, how does my career fit into this, and how does this fit into my career? Yeah. And, I think I've like, you know, right now I feel like I've cracked a code, because like me and Susie, my wife, have like really tried to balance everything, and there's different stages where it's like, this works, but then after a couple months it stops working and you have to adjust. So I think my biggest thing I've learned recently is, you know, for a while I was trying to sort of juggle everything at the same time, where I'd be like watching the kids but like trying to do emails and work at the same time, and I realized I have to kind of be 100% present for work and 100% present for family and kids, like, or you're kind of halfway there the whole time, you know, versus it's more productive to be there with the kids full on and not even think about work.
Yeah.
And it's more productive to be at work and not think about all that. So yeah, it's definitely a balance.
How do you split your time then? If you decide kids work, like, is there specific, do you do it specific days, specific times of the days?
Right now, so, all right, I did a tour in, when was that? Whenever, the first January after everything reopened,
2020,
I did a tour with Chami.
Yeah.
It was my label Night Bass and his label Confession. And we did a huge tour together. We did a compilation album and all this stuff. And I got to know Martin Horger on that tour.
Yeah.
And he has two kids as well. And I had just the one at the time. And at the end of the tour, he was like, so what do you do now? You're going to go home and make music and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to try. And he was like, what do you mean try? And I was like, oh, there's just like, it's so hard to like juggle, and there's always something to do. And he was like, oh, he's like, I just wake up at like super early in the morning, and that's my time to like work, and no one, you know, bothers me and distracts me. And I was like, what time do you wake up? And he was like, 5 a.m. And I was like, all right, let me try it. And since then, I've been waking up at 5 a.m. because it's like this time of day where, you know, the kids are sleeping, everyone's sleeping, no one's texting you and bugging you about whatever work stuff.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, that's one thing that really helps me. And that's like how I start my day. So 5 a.m. to like 7 or so is like my time.
Yeah.
And then the kids wake up, I do that. The oldest goes to preschool, and then, after that, I just kind of like get my stuff together, go to the studio, and then I'm just working all day, you know, or whatever I have to do that day. And then, you know, evening time, I'll come home and just hang out with the fam. And it's like, it's just a nice flow right now. That's like the daily thing, you know?
No, I totally get it. You're also not the first person for me, that I know that has kids that does the early morning thing. And it must be a thing that works, because I guess we're used to not sleeping that much anyway, generally, right? So it's like you can just get on with it, and if it works, it's fucking amazing. Like, if you, the more hours you can be up, the more and be productive, is you can get more shit done.
Yeah, and I'm a morning person, so like I feel the most creative like earlier on, you know. So sometimes I'll just get up and like put headphones on my laptop and work for like 2 hours on music, or or I'll go for a run or whatever, you know. It's kind of like my time to do whatever, but it's usually something productive. And yeah, and then like touring, it's like I try to do at the most like every other weekend.
Okay.
It doesn't always work out that way, but yeah, I think my career has gotten like good enough to where I don't have to like sort of do everything.
Yeah.
Like I'm a bit like more picky and choosy because just because of the kids mostly. And
how does that feel?
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough to do that. So
how does that feel to get your, because obviously I've known you for a very long time, but how does it feel to like finally be at that point in your career where you can pick and choose? Have you even thought about it?
No, it's like I have this, like I'm sure most artists have this, but I have this sort of never-ending fear that like it's all gonna go away. So like everything I do, I'm like, is this the right thing to do? But yeah. It feels good to, you know, once I realize that, because you know I don't come from like a lot of like money or anything like that, and I've never had like a ton of like, it's, you know, I don't know, I've always had this drive, like I needed to work, you know what I mean? Like I needed to make money to survive. And when I kind of quit my day job back in the day, it was like really scary. So I've always kind of like taken everything, you know what I mean? Yeah. That was always my philosophy, is like a gig, yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, and then when people started being like, you know, you don't have to like do all these things, like when I started saying no to things, it was like then people kind of wanted it more, and I was like, oh, this is cool, like, you know what I mean? And I'm like lucky enough that like there was a demand. And it, you know, hopefully it continues, but yeah, it just got better. Cause then you can like, kind of like curate what you do versus just playing some like kind of dodgy show just to do it because you're like, I gotta work.
Yeah. And I think also it's like, when it gets to that point, I'm still at that stage where like, we've just started to say no to things and not everything. But like, there's still like, so like there's still situations where I'd like to say no, right? But I just have, I'm still at that stage where I'm like in my head where I'm like, I feel like I still have to do everything. Or like if I'm not working on a weekend, I struggle with the whole like, well, you're being lazy, you're not gigging this weekend. But you're 100% right. The minute you say no, the more offers come in, or the hype comes in. And it's so strange. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's one of those things where it's like, it's not like a guarantee that if you say no, like suddenly everything's going to be like, we really want to book you, but it's it's gotta be like the right, like all the right like settings. Right. So everything's gotta be kind of in the right place. And then you do that and it's like, I guess it's like you want what you can't have kind of thing. I don't know. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. And it's like, you know what you want to play, your dream gigs, and you kind of know what you want your tour diary to look like. And I guess the goal is to like achieve that. And at some point you have to start working at it, and it's a little scary, but you know,
just gotta keep going.
That's cool though, that you're about to kind of start doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of like a thing this year that we decided to like say no to more things, just so I can write more music, really. And kind of like have a periods of time where like I have longer periods to write music and concentrate on that and spend time with family and stuff like that. It's definitely a process for me. It's like, I struggle with it. If I could tour 5 days a week, I would tour 5 days a week and try and deal with it all the rest of life on top of that. But in your situation with kids, wife, that would be pretty fucking hard.
Yeah. And it's even before that, it was like, we never have enough time, right? It's like, especially when you're traveling a lot, there's a lot of dead time that you can't do much with. And, you know, it's, I also have a label and we do events and all this stuff. And like, so there's always calls and emails and meetings and you're like, when do I make the music again? You know, it's tough, you know, and it reflects sometimes when you're like, you look at your, what did I do this year? And it's like, you know, you didn't put out a ton of music because you were doing other stuff. Yeah. And for me, at least, like, there's a mindset that I have to get in to be able to be creative. Like, I can't just do a bunch of like office type work and then be like, all right, I'm going to go like work for 2 hours and make a banger. It's
100%,
like, it takes me a day or two to kind of like my creative brain to come back to life and, you know what I mean? Get into like a groove. And so it's tough. It's, there's certain people that can do that. You got your Skrillexes and stuff who can make like a killer track, like, just on a flight or in the bathroom or whatever, you know. It's like, I don't know. So it happens sometimes, but yeah, it's that time balance again. It always shows up when you're,
I think it's also like priorities, right, as well. It, like, from like, obviously, like, you have an extremely successful record label that runs a lot of parties as well. You're not just a DJ producer, right? You have a lot of other things in the music industry that you have to deal with. And I think that just adds more to it. You like, with, even with Nightbase, like, you release records, you run events, you do merch. Like, just that alone is a full-time job. And that's not taken out of your DJ, your like own career, your like DJ career and your production career. And then also being a husband and a dad. Like, everything takes a lot of time. And I think it is, I can't relate to the husband and the dad side of things, but there does come a point. It's like it where the priorities kind of, for me, sometimes can be like skewed and be like, wait, what gave me all of this? What got me to this point? And that was writing music, and that all got me to the point. But for me, sometimes the writing music can be the last priority of all of it.
Mm-hmm. And writing the music is what got you all of those other distractions.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's tough. There's like times like earlier this year when it was just like probably one of the hardest times of my life. Like, as far as just responsibilities and lack of time and resources, was, you know, when our second was about to be born and we had just moved and like, there was a lot going on. We lost like our childcare and we don't have family here in LA. So it's really hard, like, you know, on your own. And I was just like, I had an album deadline that was like coming up and I was just, that was like self-imposed and everyone's like, all right, we need to announce it. And I had nothing. And it was just like, I had no studio and like all this stuff. And I felt so like just buried. And it was like, oh my God, I'm sitting here like watching a baby. You know what I mean? Like, while the light, like, and sometimes because all you think is like, I got to make music. Like, I got to like be active and do all this stuff to like continue feeding my family and all this. Yeah. And I'm just sitting there playing with a kid and I'm like, it's an amazing thing to have that. But in the back of your head, you're like, oh my God, I need to be working. And it's just.
How do you get through that though in your mindset of like, it's actually okay not to be working?
At that time, I don't know if I got through. now that there, I see like the light at the end of the tunnel every day, it's like, I can get all of this done, you know, just knowing that there will be time because you have to schedule the time, you know? Yeah. So that's how.
It's definitely.
You have to make it work, basically.
That is it, literally. Like, for me, I have to put things in my calendar now where, like, we started doing it, but even more so now where it's like, okay, you have to finish this day. And it's like, in the calendar, nothing else goes in the calendar. When it's studio day, nothing else goes in the calendar. And it's like, don't book me in for anything else because I know it might take me a few hours to warm up just to get in there and get shit done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with the album thing, it was like my agents had like put together an album tour and then I was literally like, I can get this done. Like, even though the baby's coming and like all this, and I don't have a studio and like, I have like demos and stuff. And I was like, I could do this. And they're like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah. And then like, they're like, all right, we need to announce the tour like in 2 weeks. What's the name of the album? Like, I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't have anything. And it was like so crazy. And they ended up rescheduling the whole tour to like this summer. And then like, I was like, all right, let's start working. I didn't have a studio. And then like my friend let me use his studio in downtown LA. So I was like, all right, Susie, my wife, I was like, help me. Like, I need to figure this out. She's like, just like every day, just go there and do what you got to do. So I would like go there for like 12, 14 hours a day, come home super late, do it again. And it was just like crazy, crazy. Like, I never worked that hard in my life. And it like, it felt so good to like get that deep into music again. And it made me realize that like, I haven't been doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I had been working for like the past year or so, but it was all just like bullshit, tinkering here and there compared to what I was doing at that time.
Dude,
obviously, I have a reason, you know, I have commitments and stuff, but like, it felt like I need this in my life. Like, I need to make room for this. And it was like, I would come home just feeling so accomplished and excited. And even though it was stressful to try to get all this done. And, you know, I was like telling her, like, if I did this like all the time, I would be like the most successful person. I mean, like the most successful artist. It was just like so productive. And so, yeah, now I'm trying to like, you know, get that scheduling right so I can have full days, to do that kind of stuff. And I got the album done and it came out in,
June.
Yeah. So yeah, it was cool. And it was just like another life learning experience, you know. It was like crazy, absolutely crazy.
Yeah. I can imagine. Is that your first album?
It's my third album.
Damn.
Yeah.
What was the process differently compared to all the others? Was it literally just cause it was just so like you like deadline was so tight that you had to just get it done?
Yeah. I wanted to do it about a year ago. I started thinking about it and I had like some demos and then we moved and then just life took over. And then like next thing I knew, they were like, hey, we booked your tour cause you told us you're going to do an album and all this stuff. And that's when it got like stressful. That was the difference, was there was an actual deadline like because of the tour.
Yeah.
And there was like promoters and stuff like that and support DJs and all this stuff. So it was like, it was already real before I had even like done it.
Yeah.
But I had the concept and some ideas and it was just putting it together. And the help I got from the album's called Together.
Yeah.
And the concept is like the idea of, I've always loved strength in numbers and I always love being a part of a crew, whatever that means or looks like at any given time. And just like having people beside you while you're pursuing your passions and kind of like trying to make your way in this crazy world. And like together is just, it's more fun to do together than by yourself. You know what I mean? I never wanted to be like some superstar or anything like that. I just wanted to do cool shit with my friends. And that's like my motto. You know what I mean? I want to do cool shit with cool people.
Yeah.
And that really came to fruition when like basically every song is a collaboration. And that's because of my situation. And it didn't actually start out that way, but all these people on the album helped me get it across the line, you know? And I also like expanded my skill set a lot, like just because I just really dove in on like mixing and sound design and stuff like that a bit more on this, because it was cool to have the other person helping with the writing as well. Yeah. And like just getting stems back or projects back and then just really diving in. And like my friend I was working with, he's just like, there was like a couple like really skilled like, you know, producers there that would come in and out and just be like, I'd be like, listen to this. And they'd be like, he had a bunch of outboard gear. So they're like, try this thing. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm running everything through this. So it was cool. And it was, you know, so it was a big team effort with a lot of people. And even my wife, like, footing all the work at home while I was out, like, finishing it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Very different.
To be fair, I want to talk to you about the whole, like, doing shit together and kind of building communities and collaborations. Something that I've noticed from the sidelines with what you've done with Nightbase from pretty much from day one, from when I've been aware of who you are, which I would say is probably since 2016, I think, for me, when I kind of was aware of what you did, which is kind of when I first kind of came to America and started touring more so. And it's something that you guys have done amazing as a label, is like really bring a community vibe with between you and the artist and you and the fans. Like, how have you done that? Because there's a lot of labels that want to do that and don't do it. And there's a lot of labels that have it and then lose it. And there's a lot of labels that just can't do that, if at all. Like, what was the initial, like, yeah, how the fuck did you do it?
Well, going all the way back to, like, when I started raving and stuff, like I started, I don't know. My first, like, official DJ gig was probably, like, 98, 99. And so I've been, like, it was different back then. Like in America, no one knew about it. It was very underground.
Yeah.
And you felt like a part of this secret community, and everyone was very like open. And it was just like so different from what was going on in like the outside world, like the mainstream kind of communities. And like, I always loved that. And that was always my favorite part about raves. And I started, I used to play hardcore, happy hardcore. And I started like a vinyl label in 2000, and it's like the first American like happy hardcore label. Sick. There was another hardcore label started by a British guy that lived in the States, but I consider it the first.
What was it called?
Because I'm American, but like,
what was that label that called?
Called Pitched Up Recordings.
Sick. That's a great name.
Probably pretty embarrassing looking back if you hear it, but so that. We had like a crew, because that scene was very small, and that's where it all kind of started. Like, we had like this family of people, and I was living in Philadelphia, and everyone was like in that like kind of tri-state area. And we did tours in a van and stuff like that. It was like really fun. So it all kind of started there, and I just fell in love with that. And even before that, I was in this little crew or whatever. We'd do parties. And then I moved to New York, and I was doing more like, the sort of similar to what I'm doing now, you know, like housey tempo or like even like grime and stuff like tempo. I was always into UK music.
Clearly.
So it's like hardcore, grime, dubstep, bassline, all that stuff. And then now like kind of UK house and stuff. But yeah, so I joined this crew called Trouble and Bass that was started by Drop the Lime and Star Eyes. And it was like, it was such a cool crew and label, and like I was just like a fan before I joined them.
Yeah.
And I just became a part of that, and it was just like this amazing crash course in like branding and you know, it was like the modern version of community that I had kind of loved from before. And then we kind of ended that. Everyone went their separate ways and pursued different things. I moved to LA, and EDM was like popping off, and it was like everyone around me was like getting rich and famous, and I just like wasn't really into the music that much, and I kind of lost my way and didn't really fit in anywhere. I still had like a career, but I was just like, I don't know, you know what I mean? There was no stage at a festival for what I played or anything like that.
Totally.
And I was like, I went and saw FOMO, Gorgon City, like,
yeah, Kai.
I can't remember if he was playing as Gorgon City or FOMO. I went and saw him play, and it was like, you know, this kind of peak EDM time. And it was like, he was playing like UK house, which I was like really into, you know, and this is 2013. And I was like, there's some people here, and it's a vibe. And it's like, I was like, I need to just like do this because there's no outlet for this here.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to start a party, not a label, just a party. And so January of 2014, I did the first party, but my whole goal was like, I felt like such an outsider from like what was going on around me in LA. Like everyone was like, you know, it was just like big room EDM everywhere and dubstep and all this stuff. And I just wanted to play like UK bass house and, and stuff like that. And there was no place for it. So I was like, all right, I'm going to like curate this night. I want to have this community of people who want this music and aren't as interested in the other music. Maybe they like both, whatever, but I wanted to build a community and did the first party and we had Christian Martin. And from there, it was really good. And then from there, we did Tyke New Light, first time in the States. Next month, Chris Lorenzo, first time in the States. Shift Key, first time in the States. You know, like, so I brought all these people over, like, who were just, like, no one in America knew who they were. But to me, I really loved what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that I clicked with all these people.
Yeah.
And, like, to this day, like, all those original artists, like I'm still friends with, we still work together,
I love that.
All this stuff. So the community was like, not only like the fans, but like the artists as well. Yeah. So we all kind of came up together and the fans were very like loyal to the party and they trusted me with the curation because like I would bring over like someone from the UK and Chris Lorenzo and the people would be like, who the fuck is that? Yeah. Like, why? No one's going to come. Like, but the fans like trusted it. You know what I mean? I brought like EZ over and like, he has no like profile here. Like in the UK, he's like God. A legend,
God.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I brought him over and they were like, who? And then like, but the fans, like I would say a good portion of them knew who he was. Because his Boiler Room came out by the time he got there, that big one that blew up. And then like, and he just killed it. And it was like the biggest vibe. And so I think you build this trust with like the people that come to the parties to be like, he's going to show us like something good.
Yeah.
Like whatever it is, it's going to be something that is sort of cutting edge or different and good. And yeah, that's kind of like how it started. And then another thing I think that helped was I grew up listening to like, remember the tape packs? Like, yeah. So I would like get tapes from, I'll go to raves and there was this British guy that would sell tapes.
Yeah.
And I would like always, every time I went to a rave, I'd buy a tape and they're all from like the UK and I'd have like the MC and like the crowd of the whistles and the horns and all of that. And I was like, that always really captured me because I would like just imagine myself there and I wanted to do that with Night Bass. So we recorded all the nights, every set, and we called it tape packs and we just put them up on SoundCloud and stuff. And that got really popular.
Yeah.
And to the point where like, you know, you hear the crowd too, like in the tape, in the recording and certain songs, they, you know how LA is, they're like, and all that kind of crazy stuff. And I would go to like Toronto and play one of the songs that I played on like one of the recordings and the crowd would react like, the same way, like they had heard.
Oh, really?
Wow. Like mimicking the recording and stuff like that. And I was like, specifically a couple songs where I was like, that's crazy. But that's kind of how it started. And it was like, yeah. Then it was like, you build this sort of like, you know, this trust and bond with the fans. And we always like get involved with the fans and stuff like that. And it's like a family, you know what I mean? And there's still people. We're about to celebrate 10 years in January. And there's people now who, obviously, you know how it is, like clubbers, ravers turn over every few years. Yep. They get jobs and grow up and move on. But there's some people who still show up to our parties and they're like, or we have like a pop-up where we sell merch during the day or something. And they'll bring their kids or something. You know what I mean? It's like so much has happened over the past decade. It's like, it's wild. And you know, a lot of people and it's just like a really cool thing.
Yeah. It's really cool. Nice that when you see, like I've made amazing friends from it, from like, especially from like my early Dirty Bird days. Like I literally,
Dirty Bird's a similar thing where it was like before us, they kind of did the same thing, you know? And it was like, you know, you were a part of that family.
And it's amazing how it works. And it's just like, maybe it's not a lot of people's goals. Maybe that's not what they want to achieve out of running a label or like running nights. But for me, it's just so important. And like watching you guys is like a blueprint, like any, and also like longevity for me, like you guys are still doing it 10 years down and you're still creating it and you're still doing the tours. And it's always really interesting and exciting, and new kids can hear it. And it's your, I think that's the interesting thing as well, is you've kind of kept a sound going that isn't popular in the UK anymore. Now it is, obviously, but it's not like what it was when you guys took it on, and you've turned it into something that's popular in America, but also there's nobody else doing it, which is wild to me in the grand scheme of things, that there's still nobody else trying to do what you guys are doing, because it's clearly extremely successful. What do you think that's about?
You mean no one in America?
I
think there's people doing it. I just think, I mean, at this point, you know, sound has moved on. Everyone wants to do, you know, tech house for a while. And now it's like kind of faster stuff. And, and I think in the UK, it's crazy because like a lot of the artists, current artists that I'm kind of like pushing along with Nightbase and getting involved with Nightbase, they live in the UK, but they can't play anywhere because it's, you either have to play drum and bass or tech house, you know what I mean?
Or hard house.
It doesn't really fit in anywhere else. So they'll come over here and play, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's smaller labels. I think honestly, like it's fucking hard. It's not easy to do that. And I've had some experience going into it. And I also think that nowadays the climate's different. There's not a lot of like brands or crews. Like, it's everything in the past, I would say like 5 years to especially now ramping up. It's like, it's a lot of individualism. Everyone wants to do their own thing. So you're like, I'm going to play my own parties. I'm going to start my own label and release my own music. So it's harder to start something like Nightbase because no one wants to be a part of it. You know what I mean? Like with Nightbase, it was like everyone, everything was lined up. It was like, all these artists that I liked felt the same as me, were kind of in the same place as me.
Yeah.
And we all grew together.
Yeah.
All those artists went off and did their own thing. And Nightbase turned into me, you know, discovering newer artists and helping to build, you know, newer artists. And then they go off. And so that's kind of like has been what it's become. Is more of like an incubation for like newer artists, which is cool. But I think going into now that it's 10 years, I'm like reflecting and looking forward at the same time. And I'm like, next year to celebrate the 10 years, I'm bringing back like, you know, a lot of more established artists and focusing on the newer artists or the artists that were new that we've now been working with who are getting a little bit bigger and just keep working with them. And I think we've brought in so many unknown or like smaller smaller artists. I want to keep developing the ones that, you know, are got bigger, you know?
I think there's also on like, I totally agree, but I like, let's be real, it's still business. And I think that's a clever business move at the end of the day as well, is like as a record label, you still need to earn money. It's not just a passion project for you, is it? Although it is a passion project and you're creating something really interesting, you've created an amazing community, still has to be successful. And in this day and age where streaming is, although yes, it's great that we make money from streaming and we're not in the like LimeWire days and Napster days, it still hard for a record to be successful now, like financially.
Yeah, there's a lot of other music out there. It's like, even if a record's great, it's hard to stick out, you know? But yeah, I mean, I think both ways have worked for us. with a newer artist, there's a lot more work that the label has to do.
Yeah.
Totally. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like they don't come in with a fan base. So no. You're kind of building it with them. And then, you know, like I said, nowadays everyone's so individual that they want to go off and do their own thing. And I'm like, cool, go do your thing. Yeah. But I do want to like, that's why I kind of want to move away from that, because you put a lot of work, effort, and money, and people don't realize that like releasing music costs money.
Yeah,
you know, like because you, yeah. We have people that, you know, get everything ready, create the assets and marketing and all this stuff, promo, and then you have to pay those people, and then by the time the song comes out, it has to make a certain amount of money to make the money back and all that stuff. So I think focusing on people who, you know, we've worked with before and just like continuing working with them versus like keeping bringing in new people. It's like, you know, I'm old, I have kids. I want to keep working with the people I know. And I get excited about new artists, but it just gets more and more daunting as the industry evolves into a more complex and difficult thing, you know?
I totally agree. And like, I guess real talk, like, how much does it cost you, like for people that don't know, like how much does it cost you to put a record out roughly?
It's hard to like quantify, like because I have a staff sort of like, I think a lot of independent labels will just like hire artist, hire person to do this, hire person to do that.
Yeah.
But I have people like that work for Night Bass who are like also the family thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're all so passionate about it and such amazing people, hard workers. And so it's hard to like break it up, you know, into like release by release. But yeah, I mean, on the cheapest side, you could just do nothing and put a record out. And, you know, I think probably you could probably get away with like a few $100 or something. But like, you know, if you want to do like little video assets and if you want to do a little bit of marketing and stuff like that, it costs money and it adds up really quickly. And a promo campaign or something, it all adds up. So it's kind of hard to say because I don't know off the top of my head, but
it's hard.
And the bigger the artist, the more money you're spending because you're like, all right, like this is a shot. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they have a following, they're tried and tested. We know this is a good song. Let's put some money behind it so that more people see it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it's hard to get your music heard. So got to spend money to get it in front of people's faces. So, totally. And then once they hit play, they either like it or they don't. And that's where you find out because, you know, it's
I think also with Spotify and Apple Music and just the way streaming platforms are set up, it's hard to even find your favorite artist's music, like to like even know, because there's so much noise to even know that they've got a release out. Like you might not even hit a release radar for like the first month. And then you're like, fuck. Like, it's so strange.
It's so true. Like I'll have like a release come out and I'm like, it's not even on my release radar. Yeah. Like what the, it's me.
Yeah.
Like, so, or that's like at the bottom and I'm like, man, this is crazy. Like, but you know, we have a good, like I said, like the fans trust us. And I think we have a pretty good, there's just like certain things we have in place that work. Like we have a Night Bass Spotify playlist that like when I put out a record and we put it on that playlist, like, and then you look at the artist section on Spotify, it's usually one of the top playlists. You know what I mean? It often gets more plays than like a big playlist. So like, you know, the dedication from the small amount of fans that we have actually brings a lot of value and attention. So, but I guess the point is like reaching new fans too. So, cause you always want to, you know, to reach more people.
To reach it. It's really strange at the moment. And it's a conversation that I've had plenty of times and I'm sure you have, but it's like, how does this evolve? How do you grow from this? Because it feels like it's very hard to have a moment if you're either like not gone viral on social media. Because even like big records that DJs play, like if there's one record that every DJ plays, like unless they're recording that, they're playing that record and that's going up on Instagram or Spotify or Instagram or TikTok, like you don't even know that they're playing that record. And with the way Shazam is now, is it can't be Shazammed until it's released. So it's hard to build the hype up around that. And then you're like,
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Especially if it's like a new artist that doesn't have the following. It's like, how do you then build that? It's fucking impossible. It's not impossible because it clearly happens, but like, it's very different nowadays.
And there's a lot of mystery too. Yeah. Like sometimes things will tick off and we're like, how did this happen? And you can kind of like trace it back. Sometimes you'll find a source of like where it's coming from, but you know, sometimes it's a little bit of a mystery. Like I did a record with this artist from Detroit called Clank.
Yeah.
And he's been on the label for years and years, and he's a sick producer. And we did a record with Queen Mills from the UK. She's amazing, like rapper, singer, artist. And we did a record, and it's just like never quit. Like it started like pretty good, but like it's probably like 4 years old maybe. And like it's like, I think it just hit 10 million. And it's like, we haven't done anything extra like marketing or anything. It's just like there's certain records that like just go and never stop, you know? And then sometimes there's a record that will do really big on Beatport, but then like nothing on Spotify and then vice versa. You know, it's interesting.
It's really strange that and how there's no correlation. I talk about this all the time with my team. Is like you might have a record that does really well on radio, but then doesn't do anything on Spotify or even Beatport, and it's just it's weird that there's no correlation, because it used to be like back before streaming, it was like if you did a rec, if your record was doing well on Beatport, it would do well on specialist radio in the UK and the DJs were playing it, and it meant that you were doing well. You can have a Beatport number one now and it not stream, which is fucking crazy. It's very weird. It's really weird.
Also, I don't think it even translates to like gigs either.
No.
You know, you could put, there's artists that don't put music out forever and then just have a crazy busy schedule with sold out shows and crazy fans. And, you know, it's also disconnected and there's, it's hard to figure it out. And I think a lot of people drive themselves crazy trying to find like a pattern or a formula. Yeah. And it's like, everyone's different. Every artist is different, you know, and the way it takes off, you might be big over here, but not here. And that's why I think, you know, years ago when people used to look at numbers, they'd look at your followers and your likes and your streams. And it was like, that's how they quantified like your worth or whatever, you know, putting a value on who you are as an artist. And I think that's so just not a real thing. Yeah, it doesn't like those numbers don't translate to like real life, because there's other things like just how much people, I don't know, how dedicated your fans are or stuff like that.
It's like classic example. Like I'm only using myself for example, right? Like I go on my Spotify now and I go, where are people listening? Okay. So my biggest listeners are Amsterdam, Rotterdam, Brussels, Berlin, London. They're my top five. Okay. I play in, but I don't play in Amsterdam unless it's ADE. I've never played in Rotterdam. I've never played in Russell's. I play in Berlin quite a lot, and I haven't played in London for 2 years. And it just goes to show, right? Like how, what you're seeing on data doesn't correlate with what you're doing. Like my biggest tour in is North America.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because you almost want to like, let me go play a show in those cities and just see what happens. Because obviously there's someone there listening to your music, but maybe the promoters aren't aware of you. But who knows? Like I said, you just don't know. No. Like,
and you know how it try. Is. You know how it is though, because it's like, some of this, like we could go to multiple promoters in Amsterdam or Rotterdam or wherever and go, please book Will Clark, here's some data. But it's like, well, actually, no, like all these promoters are only promoting tech house nights or hard house nights or something like that. And there's nobody in that market doing what you did in America, where it was like, there's a market for something like this. It's a very strange industry. It's like, I can't remember who I was talking to the other day, and they were talking to this like athlete. He was like an American Olympic athlete, swimmer. And after being an athlete, he went into like kind of business management and business talking, and kind of like would be a consultant in business and like structuring businesses, because being an athlete, you're very like dedicated. You have to be very structured on those things. And they were explaining, this person, my friend, was explaining the music industry and was saying like, you can put a record out and it can do this and it can do that, but then it doesn't correlate into anything else. It can literally just do its own thing. And like how you can say you could put like 10 records out and none of them do well, and then the 11th record does really well. And he was like, this guy was just absolutely amazed. He was like, that's not an industry. That's fucking gambling. And it's so true, but you have to do it to like, there's just something in the back of your head where you're like, yeah, but what if this record does really well and it blows up and it gets you to where you're at? And there's always that what if in the back of my mind is like, what if I don't put that out? What if I did put that out? And like, do you get the same thing?
I was thinking about this yesterday. It's like, if I put a record out and it doesn't do anything, it doesn't like bother me at all. Like,
really?
As long as I like the record, like I look back in the catalog, I would say like probably 4 out of 5, I'm like, oh, that's like not that good. But like at the time it served a purpose for me. And like, I don't know, you got to be an artist. And if you have you make the decision to put something out, it's like, you're doing it for a personal reason. And I think, I don't know, I think that's a good reason to do things, is like, if you're an artist making, you're creating something, hoping that other people will like it.
Yeah.
You should make it for yourself, not other people. And I don't know. I don't really know. Like, I don't really care that much. Like, obviously I want every song to go off, but like, it doesn't, and it doesn't bother me. And you know, some people like it, that makes me happy, you know. And
have you always been like that?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, there's like times where I'm like, I want a hit song.
Yeah.
I've never had like a hit song. I've had like songs that are like, I have a good catalog of music that like does well.
Yeah.
But like, I've never had like a song that was like,
same.
Boom. You know what I mean? Yeah, and, maybe close, but or on like an underground level, but nothing like, you know, remotely big. But I don't really care. Like, it, I still have a career. I think it would be nice to have that, but I think it would also add a lot of pressure. Because I know people who have hit songs, and there's always that pressure to do the follow up that sounds, you know, make another one. Yeah. You know,
which
is a good problem.
Oh, totally. You know? And I was talking about this earlier on with somebody else on the podcast, and for me, like, I'm glad I haven't had a hit record at this point in my career. Like, I'm really actually happy and purely with my theory is that I've built a foundation of followers and fans that buy tickets and that listen to my music purely based on not having a hit record. And for me, mm-hmm. that's more valuable, because I think it's, especially nowadays, it's not easy, but there's so many more people having hit records for a month, for 2 months. And that record does huge things, but there isn't a foundation of like ticket buyers, followers, like constant listeners. And it's for me, it's like, I don't know if you feel the same, but from an outsider's point of view, like your career is also very much like that. You've built this amazing crew and community around you, and you've built this amazing business based on consistency.
Yeah, it's like trust or whatever. Yeah. I think like what makes me really happy about my career, one thing I'm like most like satisfied with my career is like when I DJ, like if I play like the big stage at a festival and it's like 75% unreleased music.
Yeah.
And the rest 25 that is released is like mine or my friends or like nothing like that's like a gigantic hit or whatever. And the crowd is like fully fucking behind it and it's packed the whole time. And it's like unreleased music by some unknown artist is like going off. It's like, to me, that just feels so good. Like, I'm not playing like levels edit or whatever, you know what I yep. mean? Like it's, and that might not mean shit to anybody else, but like, to me, it just feels good to be able to like feed that stuff to like people who want it and watch them enjoy it. I think, feels good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause I love discovering new music and I love sharing it through that way, you know?
I think it's also about being super authentic to who you are. And if I think it's very easy to go on stage and just play every edit and every banger in the world and everyone absolutely lose it, right? Which is great. Like there's purposes for that and there's times that that has to happen. But like when that's who you are as a person, which is who you are, and it still works and fans still turn up to come and watch you play, like there's nothing better about that. At all.
Yeah, it's a buzz.
Yeah.
It's a buzz.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. This, I think it was Friday just gone or Saturday, you just did Shrine with Loz. How was that?
It was really sick. So we've been friends, like I said, since like the third night base, I think. And so going on 10 years and we've done a lot of music together. And we decided last year, a couple years ago, like, let's start a label our collaboration project.
Yeah.
We had a record called Fly With Us that was like, we basically had it like unreleased for like a couple years and everyone was always asking for it. So it was kind of like this joke, like we're never going to put it out. But then we eventually put it out and then we decided to just call our project Fly With Us.
Yeah.
And so we've done a few sets and like this year we started planning out, we wanted to kind of take it. We kind of really wanted to go all in on this thing. So, you know, it's like my best friend. We love working together. We work really well together. We have fun when we DJ together. It's all just the same old story, right? It's like doing cool shit with cool people and like having fun. Mm. And, you know, we wanted to take it to like another level and not just like two guys showing up and DJing. So we started working on like a stage production that we want to bring to our shows and we want to play, you know, we want to pick and choose which shows to play.
Yeah.
And the first sort of unveiling of the production was at Shrine. So we've been like working on this thing for 6 months, you know, designing the stage, doing the content, the lighting, all this stuff. And both of us have never done anything like that before. And it's like, it's a lot of work. It's expensive. And, you know, but it was like, we really want to do this and we really want to like invest in ourselves and try to do something really cool and big. Yeah. And so that was sort of like the first time we saw it in person or anyone saw it in person. And it was awesome. It was really cool. And I think, you know, everyone loved it. It was cool. It sold out and all that. And it was like just a good, fun vibe. And it looked great. And now that people have seen it, you know, we can be like, because we've been like trying to tell promoters about it. And they're like, oh, I don't really understand. Because you show them like drawings of it and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But now we have videos and stuff like that. So you can just be like, here it is. And they'll be like, I want it or I don't want it. So I think that's the next step. That was a big step for us, was designing that, executing it.
Yeah.
And just showing the world. And then it was a success. And now it's like, let's take that somewhere else. And we built it in a way that you could just go anywhere and kind of source, you know, the parts and build it. And yeah, it's cool. And it's not a live show, it's a DJ set, but you know, it's very, every set's different. We've been writing a new intro song for every set we do.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into it, and we're very, very serious about it. So yeah, I'm very excited. It's like both of us are kind of leaning into it.
Where else are you planning on doing it?
Our solo.
Where else are you planning on doing it?
Nothing yet. That was like, that was the big thing that we had to like get out of the way.
Yeah.
And now it's like, all right, let's see what happens. So yeah.
Selling that many tickets. How many tickets is Shrine? Like five?
Yeah, five.
Is that the biggest show you've done in LA?
Yes. Yeah.
How does that feel?
Good. We did it last year as well.
Yeah.
But
not as this year, right? This is different.
The pressure behind it was different, yeah. I think. And this year there's just so much more events going on.
Yeah.
You know, every day it was like another announcement and we were like, oh my God, like, just closure the same night. Oh my God. but yeah, it's, you know, that's how it goes, but, it worked out. And yeah, it feels good. There's a lot of pressure these days on like, you got to sell out a bunch of tickets. And it's like, can we just have a good show?
When did that culture start? Because for me, it was just after COVID more so. Like, I know like leading into COVID for me, it was still about selling as many tickets as possible. But it feels like after COVID, everything has to be sold out. Otherwise, you failed.
Yeah. I've been talking about that with some people lately. It's like, it's interesting because it's obviously like, if you don't sell out, everyone's still, and it's a good night, everyone's still making money and it's a success, but like there's something, it's like we live in this world of like instant gratification and like, you know, just being able to say sold out. It's like easy. Right. And it's like you won or whatever, not like, it was a good show and a lot of people were there. It's like easier to just be like sold out and that everyone understands it. And
yeah,
I don't know.
It's weird. What's your thoughts on people putting things on their social media that it's sold out? Cause it feels like more of an ego thing rather than actual letting people know tickets are gone.
I'm fine with it. I think it's like, you have to, if you know, it's like, if you want to be a musician or a DJ or whatever this day and age, there's a lot of things you have to do to make it. There's a lot of games and facets of your career that people didn't have to do before as the artist.
Yeah.
And I think something like that is one of them. And almost feels weird if you wouldn't do that. You know what I mean?
I really struggle with it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I really struggle with that whole, like, I get it with like merch and things like that. But I think for me that I struggle with the whole, like, thanks for an amazing sellout weekend, people. Like, I just feel like it is about that. Of course it is. It's a business, right? But there, for me, there's like, do the fans care that it's sold out? Like, what are we doing this for? Like, in the grand scheme of things, yes, we're doing it to earn money now, but like the people that actually follow us, do they care that it's sold out? I don't know.
I would guess a percentage cares, but they support you, especially your fans that like followed you for a long time.
Yeah.
I see that in the comments, they'll be like, cause after the Shrine, I was like, sold out, you know, thanks for the sold out, you know, exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. It was like, you know, there's fans that are like, oh, you guys deserve it and that kind of stuff. And it's like,
that's nice.
Some people do care. Some people probably don't even fucking notice. And
yeah,
I don't know why, you know, I think like also for the industry, it's more of like a industry. Telling the rest of, you know, the yeah. promoters or whatever, you yeah, know,
it's a weird,
you gotta advertise thing. Yourself. You gotta promote yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of this shit is smoke and mirrors.
Well, this is the thing. It's like, how many people don't sell out, but say sell out?
Whew, that's a big move. That's a bold move.
I bet it happens. I can guarantee you there's multiple people that will say it's sold out and it doesn't sell out.
Oh my God. I don't know about that. I wouldn't do that, but
I couldn't do that. Smoke and mirrors, but hey, it works.
I remember, I just thought of this, like when Twitter first came out, like before people really knew what to do with it. It wasn't really used for like what it is now. Like people have discussions on there and stuff that. But like back in the day, it'd be like, I'm drinking a coffee.
Literally. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, in the third person, it was like Will Clark is currently eating a burger.
But I remember when it was like, a sort of etiquette started to appear. So I remember DJs would be like, literally just be like, I killed it last night. Like they would say stuff like that. And that started to be like, that's kind of weird. And then people would call other DJs. Like that became like a thing that was like, don't say that.
Yeah.
But then it was like, you had to like slyly say you killed it without saying you killed it. Like show a picture or like, you know what I mean? Retweet someone. But now it's like, we've kind of gone back to being like, I killed it last night. I sold out last night. Like,
yeah, it's just gone back. It's gone back to just like stroking your own ego so much. But it's strange. How do you manage with your ego as a successful artist?
Who do you think you are?
Yeah. No, and I mean that genuinely, like, because everyone has an ego at some point, right? We all have an ego. Whether it's a negative or a positive, but like how do you kind of stay grounded? Because like I've seen you, I've met you over the years. Like you're just the normal dude. Plays.
Don't stroke my ego, bro. Don't stroke my ego. No, like I don't know. I think it goes back to like what I said earlier. I'm just like terrified that all of this is like gonna go away.
Yeah.
I don't know why. That's just how I feel. And. Yeah. I'm a pretty like, I mean, I feel pretty positive about myself and, you know, and what I do, but there's also like a lot of doubt, you know what I mean? Like there's so many external things and it's tough, but I think one good piece of advice that someone gave me was like, especially earlier on, like leading into Night Bass was like, don't worry about what other people are doing.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that affects your ego a lot. Like, why does this person have that and I don't? And you know what I mean? And it's like a terrible thing to think about and just like not good. So I just years ago just stopped like thinking about, like if I see someone being successful, it's like, great, that's awesome. I got to keep working too. You know what I mean? And people achieve things because they did something to achieve that.
Totally.
They didn't get lucky, even though it seems like people get lucky, not really. They did work.
Yeah.
And you know, I think like once I realized like it doesn't work like that, you just grind it out. You know what I mean? And then you do all these other things like going on social media and you have to do that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. The ego thing, I don't even think about it. I have no idea how to answer that.
It's a tough one.
I kind of did.
No, you did. But, you did massively. I think the whole comparison of other people and looking at other people's can really get you. And I'll be honest, it still gets me sometimes. Like I'll catch myself like going, what the fuck? And then like I'll stop myself and be like, no, there's space for everybody, right? And there is room for everyone to be successful. And the fact that somebody became more successful than you quicker than you, it's cool. They might be unhappy.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, it's not a competition for me anymore. It was for a long period at the beginning of my career. It was definitely a competition. Now it's definitely not. It's changed massively.
Because I realize like nothing that anyone else is doing is gonna like affect you, unless they're like attacking you or something. Yeah, but like, it's like, I don't know. There's no threat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I also find that it's, I don't know. I just really enjoy like seeing other people who, people who come from like the same sort of like passion that like I feel like I have, like, yeah, I see them doing something that's difficult and they get success. I'm like, that's fucking cool. Like, yeah, that makes me like feel really good. Mm. And like, I don't know. Nothing. I don't know. None of that shit bothers me.
It's great. Yeah, yeah. I think there comes a time, right? And I think for me as well, there's like some days when I'm like a bit down in the dumps in like personal life, or like something else is going on in my life, and then I look at something else and I'm like, I can get into that mindset occasionally. But like, I remember like 2018 for me, it was just like a year of just like doubting everything and looking at everybody else. And it's just debilitating in like a career when you're trying to create interesting stuff, because you just try and it just doesn't work. It's just impossible. Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
And it's almost like, I guess that's almost like a litmus test for how you feel about yourself, yeah, right? It's like, because you kind of are in a rut or you feel bad, it happens to everybody. And mm-hmm, it's like, suddenly you see everyone else up. And also all the, everything you see, it could be like real or fake. You know exactly what I mean? We're just looking on social media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, everything looks like great and wonderful. And, but if you feel bad about something or you're depressed or whatever, it's like, yeah, I think you would have a negative, you know what I mean? It's almost like,
I agree,
I'm mad at them because I feel bad.
Yeah.
I can see that about myself.
And it's actually got nothing to do with them. It's,
yeah,
it's just, yeah, it's kind of a projection as a person. It's like projecting your feelings onto that situation and kind of blaming that situation, why, rather than being very internal and looking at yourself and working through the issues yourself.
And lately I've kind of like felt a bit of, I think we all noticed sort of a change in like sounds out there in the clubs and stuff like that. And I feel that. And I feel like Night Bass, when I started Night Bass, it was not there. And then that sound grew and then kind of flooded America. And then now it kind of went out for a while. Other stuff came in, but now there's other stuff coming in on top of that stuff. Yeah. So it's like, you feel it coming around you. So it's like, the world is changing, or the world of music, that our little world of music is like changing a bit. That's and great. It's scary, but all I do is just think like, all right, I got to just fucking work harder. And my advice to people was always like, just stick to your sound and do your sound and don't chase what's popular. And I have to sometimes tell myself that, you know what I mean? Like, cause you feel a bit left behind sometimes.
100%.
And it's like,
100%.
But I just like, all right, let me just, I love this music that I make. I love, it's just always a slow evolution. I like to like, you know, change and it just kind of reignite the passion and find some new sounds or whatever. And it's the mental health thing in music is a real, you know, there's a reason why everyone talks about it. It's one day you're on, you know, you're doing really well, and the next people are like, who?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's weird. It's also weird how the industry doesn't think of that in a grand scheme of things, because it is a business and businesses don't think about emotions. There's no emotion in business generally. Like if you go sit in a board meeting of like a Fortune 500, the likelihood that they're thinking of someone's feelings, that it's not, is they're thinking about how do we make as much money as possible. It's exactly what promoters do. It's exactly what agents do. It's exactly what managers do. And it's exactly what record labels do. Like it's just, and I don't mean that in a horrible way. I'm not saying that's a negative thing, because it is what it is. The real artist in the music industry is the artist. And I was talking to somebody, I'm in the process of doing like a deal at the moment, and there's this like battle when you mix business and art, and the like, the emotions that can come up with it, because the business side of it doesn't care about the emotions and doesn't care about what you put into it and how long you've been put into it. Like, even when like there's A&Rs involved, even when there's people that like you've put so much work into something and then it's literally just like not what they want, or like the amount of rejection you deal with as an artist as well, it's definitely, it's hard. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy process.
Yeah, music is like, it's a mix of, it's like a fun thing, right?
Yeah.
But then it's mixed with business, and then there's like relationships, and then a lot of people who only know the business part, who come and go. And yeah. I think like being in the dance music industry in some kind of way for the past 20 plus years is like, those relationships that I've built by just being a good person, yeah, and like making friends with other people because we work in this because we love music.
Yeah.
A lot of those people that I've known from a long time ago are still there, yeah, in some way or another. And like, people have, you know, there's a lot of dickheads that come in and they come and go.
Yeah.
And, you know, when someone comes in and stirs things up, all those people that have been around forever, you're just like, yeah, yeah. And you know, you kind of like,
you see,
you're each other's like rock, you know, yeah, what I mean? And it could be like a brutal industry. And I think some people, it definitely takes like a thick skin sometimes, but I think it's okay to talk about all that.
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about it, because I think, yeah, there's artists that are listening to this that are coming up that are getting rejected and they're going through the shit that we all go through, and they're just like, why me? And it's just kind of a realization that it's not just you, it's fucking everybody. In this industry, no matter how big or how small, it's like there's always somebody,
yeah,
kind of, yeah. I think what reiterating what you said as well, it's like, for me, it feels like it's been more so like that in the last like year or two, even more, more so than what it ever has been. Not too sure why. Maybe it's, maybe we're going through that EDM stage, what that happened in during that EDM period, where like so much money has come into the industry that people want to get involved and make more money from it.
Yeah, I think there's something there. It definitely feels like there's an influx of new people, which is good, but then you get, you know, lot of people that don't know like the history or all that kind of important stuff.
Yeah, the
and
culture,
how to sort of treat people and all that. But it's funny because, you know, I remember when I was younger, when I was like 20, I went to like the UK and I was working with some of like my heroes, yeah, and like hardcore, who like, you know, I would just like go and work, you know, sit in a studio with, you know, someone, and like, it was a different time, right? Where like you kind of had to pay your dues.
Yeah.
Heavily. And I was like, I really wanted to get better at producing. And I remember being in the studio with this guy, and he was like, we were working on something. And I'm like, oh, like, why don't you try this or that? And like, he's like, yeah, go make us a cup of tea. You know what I mean? Like, but I was like a kid, and I was like, I want to learn. So I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll go make some tea, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I think it's a bit different now, because you don't have like, there's not much of a barrier. Like, right, you could learn how to produce on YouTube. You could like download samples and make a hit song quickly. But then navigating the industry after that's very tough, because you didn't have to go through that,
yeah,
sort of gatekeeping that weeds out. If you're basically, you have to figure out if this is something you want to deal with or, yeah, not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and totally. So I am still here. My camera just is playing up at the moment.
Disappeared.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Cause I think, also you can pay somebody to make your record for you.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah,
which is a weird situation now, where you're seeing like a lot of house records being written by other people, which I have no issue with, but I think it also takes that level of like hustle out of it to a certain extent, because they've became popular on social media and they've got a demand, but they still don't have the product, which is fucking wild to me that that's happening on a regular basis. But
I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. That's, yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's fine. I think that's cool, whatever, but
it's not me.
I just don't understand. Same. You know, I guess I understand. You're like, I want to be famous and like standing on the stage like this, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I think this is the amazing thing about what it actually benefits us, because
yes,
the more people that come to the scene, the more likelihood they're going to listen to our music and get involved, or we're going to be booked at festivals and they're going to be there and we get new fans. It's fucking amazing that. And for me, I'm like all for the more people that get bigger in the scene, the better it is for all of us.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting.
Yeah. Like you said, I feel like there is like a big influx of new people, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Because if you've been in the scene for a long time, new people are like, they'll find out about you and come to you. Like that happens to me all the time. Like kids will come and be like young kids, and they'll be like, kind of like have like blowing up or whatever, and just be like, oh, you know, I heard your music when I was a little kid, or like my brother listened to it. And you're just like, makes you feel old, but it's like cool that they're interested in that sort of like the people that have been around. You know, not just the new hot.
Yeah, it's thing. Cool. Super cool, man. What's your plan for the rest of the year?
The rest of the year, just make tunes. Got some new ones with Lorenzo. Probably one new one with Lorenzo coming out this year. Just planning this Night Base 10-year. Yeah. Basically, we'll be celebrating all year. We'll be doing 10 shows, like a tour. Amazing. Next year.
Big ones?
Yeah, just... Huh?
Big ones or just small intimate?
Yes. Pretty big. Not like huge. There's a couple bigger ones, but yeah, it'll be special. So bringing out, trying to pull out some good guests for those. That's the tough part. But
so hard, isn't it?
Getting
people to play your events because they all want to play their own.
Yeah. But yeah, man. So, all right. So this is like the studio I'm using. I've been using for a while, like 4 months. I'm building a studio in my backyard. Amazing. That's almost done. So that's like my biggest thing for this year is like when that's done in a few weeks, like I will be setting everything up and just grinding out as much music as possible. So it's been tough. Like I said, like for the past year, I haven't had a studio really.
That's rough.
So it'll be excited to have a place where I can bring people to work with. And if you come to LA, maybe come through and check it out.
Man, I'd love to. I'd absolutely love to. I'd love to grab some food and like actually catch up because we never get the chance to do that. So
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it'd be great to do that. Get Loz out there as well.
Where are you now?
I'm in the UK right now.
Oh, okay.
In the UK. I just got back from America on Monday. Tuesday. Yesterday.
Where do you stay mostly?
Depends. Well, I was living in Detroit a lot of the time. So I do like 50-50 America, 50-50 Detroit, 50-50 like Bristol, Somerset area. But I've just sold my house in Detroit. So I will be going back to Michigan, but not for a while. So I'm just kind of like chilling in the UK and being a bit of a nomad and like testing out some new cities and just working it out as and when, really.
Mr. Worldwide.
It's going to be weird, to be fair, because again, I won't have a studio in America. So like my only studio time is in England.
What are some cities that you're looking at?
I'm going to go, I've got some friends in Austin, pretty much just anywhere where I've got friends so I don't have to pay for hotels. Or like Airbnb. So I got some friends in Austin, which I might spend a bit of time there. I'm probably going to come to LA just to get some work done because I always find it really productive just working there. I personally wouldn't want to live there again, but like it's very easy to get work done. I don't really know where else. Any recommendations?
Oh, man. I like LA, but... The only place I guess the only place I'd probably live outside of LA at this point in my life, man, I don't know.
It's tough, isn't it?
I really like London. You know, I've always loved London.
Yeah.
But I'm a city. I like cities, but I do. I think LA is my spot.
Yeah. How long you been?
You know how it is. Like, the city's only as good as the people you're around, right?
100%.
That's a good move, going to where you have friends, because you could be in the best city in the world, but if you don't have any good friends or any good people around, it's kind of like,
it's kind of pointless.
What am I doing here?
Yeah. You know? I agree. I think that was also the issue when I lived in LA initially. I think I moved there like 2015 for like a few months. And I didn't really know anyone at all. Like, I didn't know, have any real friends there at that time. It was like just as my career had just started in like touring, in America at least. And yeah, it was just like, not lonely, but like very disjointed.
It's a daunting place. Yeah. There's like a lot of pressure to like do, I don't know. There's just like so much stuff going on. Yeah. And you know, it's like Hollywood and all that shit and music, all the music that's here. It's like, yeah,
it's a lot.
It's daunting, I think, when you first come here. But
yeah, I know.
I just,
we all know so many people that love it as well, which is weird. Like, mm-hmm. I still struggle. Like, my manager lives there, and I still am like, dude, why do you guys live here? Like, I still can't get it. But people love it, so I'm clearly wrong. I'm the one that's wrong.
No, it's just not for you.
Yeah, true that.
Yeah, I moved from New York, and I was gonna come here for a year, and I was like, I just need a break from New York. Like, yeah, let me go to LA for a year. And I just, and I was always like, there's always like that New York LA beef back in the day. And
yeah,
I was like, LA sucks. And then I like fell in love with it. And then now it's been like 11 or 12 years since then. So
see, New York's my jam.
I love New York.
If, yeah, if I was rich as fuck, I would be in New York all the time.
Yeah.
Or like 50% of the time, because I like countryside. I'm like a bit of a country boy. So like, I'd ideally like place in the country in the UK, like New York, Brooklyn townhouse in Williamsburg. All over that. But
you just need to make like $2 million a year.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe more nowadays.
Everyone I knew in New York is like gone. I maybe know like a few people left there because it's just like crazy expensive. And I think now with kids, I could never live in New York, just logistically. Like, moving around with two babies is like
not fun. Insane there. And also, like, I think the quality of life generally in New York is like more like younger person, like hustling, trying to like get in at life. Whereas like when you want to like chill a little bit, it's like, there's nowhere to fucking chill in New York. Like, even if you're in Central Park, it's not chill at all. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's pretty nonstop. But yeah, it's such a great city.
I always, in New York, it was a great time when I lived there. It was like that, like, blog house era.
Yeah.
And it was just such a good crew of people. Like, because we had Trouble in Bass, and then there was like Fool's Gold and all these other crews. And we all were like friends and would like support each other. And it was like this great thing. But the one thing that I always liked about LA is when I would come out here, everyone's so open about like, you know, oh, just come to the studio and like, we'll do this, or like, I do this, like, we should do something together. Yeah. Everyone's very like open and collaborative. Whereas in New York, it was very like
clicky, protective. Yeah.
Like, you're like, I have a studio, but like, I'm using it. You know what I mean? There's no like, it's not like come through. It's like very like, I have stuff to do. And I think it's almost like something that comes from like the lack of space.
Yeah.
Where you're just very like,
don't wanna share.
This is my space. But like out here, it was always, I was always like, man, this is crazy. Like, everyone just wants to like hang out and work together and like listen to each other's music. And I just fell in love with that lifestyle versus being very isolated, even though you're hanging out with these people and you know what they're doing. It wasn't the same, you know what I mean? It's totally. It's a little bit different.
No, I totally get it.
Spaces to hang out, like, it's like go to a restaurant or a bar or like, you know what I mean? There's not like spots like here.
No, I agree, man. I totally agree with that, dude. We've just done nearly an hour and a half. We should probably wrap this up.
Cool.
Thank you so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed this one. I usually end it with, how can people follow you and get involved with what you do, but pretty much everybody knows what you do and they probably listen to this. But however, how do you get involved with the night based scene? How do you follow? Who do you follow? What do you listen to? Blah blah blah.
At DJ AC Slater on social media, at Nightbase, nightbase.info. Watch out for Nightbase 10-year anniversary. We're coming. It's going to be a great year of sort of rebirth of the label and everything. So watch out for that. Sick. And fly with us, me and Lorenzo.
Go see a party. Dear promoters, go and book a show.
Yeah.
Mate, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
Oh, mate, anytime. Finally. Yeah, I know. We do, like, I need to, let's do this more often, man. Like, I'd love to catch up with you in person. So let's plan it when I'm in LA.
Absolutely, man.
Cool, man. Keep safe. See you soon.
All right. See you soon, man.
Peace, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Big love to you, AC, for coming on. Big love to everybody. Listen, please subscribe, go join the Discord, and keep safe, and I'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.